And it's a national, it's one of the agencies of Health and Human Services. So I don't know how much you know about it. So am I getting feedback? I think, let's see. This is sort of a fun quiz just to get you to know about the agency, okay? Okay, what do we regulate? We do foods, drugs, medical devices, biologic products, veterinary drugs, radiological health, and tobacco products. And I think that you know that there's, we are going more and more and more electronic. Anytime a drug is approved, we used to have it in paper, and now everything is on, you know, I don't even think they accept paper anymore. It's all electronic. And that has its pluses and its minuses. But we are really rapidly, and I really give you credit for being in this club, because this is the way the world is going. Okay, so take a look at that, and then pretty soon I'm going to ask you questions. It's just fun, though. It's not, you know, it's a little quiz. And we, for foods, we do canned foods, seafood, soft drink, potato chips, candy, spaghetti, and peanut butter. All the stuff you love to eat, right? Drugs, cough syrup, aspirin, allergy medications, antiseptic mouthwash, fluoride toothpaste, and some pretty hard, for drugs, we also do the chemotherapeutic drugs, what we call monoclonal antibodies. It's, you know, we have a whole range of drug products, and it's getting more and more and more complex. Yeah, I think if you could. Okay, next, yeah. Then here's the cosmetics, eyeliner, you can see our, okay, and Halloween makeup. There's a lot. It's 25 cents or more out of every dollar you spend for consumer products. We are basically a consumer protection agency. Okay, then here's your medical devices, pacemakers, prosthetic limbs, braces, bandages, as well as MRI machines, x-rays, those. I don't know if we do those scooters. If it's got a medical use, then we usually take a look at it. And now we're taking a look at apps, you know, for medical, like an app to decide whether or not your blood sugar is too high. We're taking a look at that. That's just really new. It's being discussed. Okay, biologics, blood, plasma, platelets, tissue banks. We have somebody in my office. There's a woman who just goes to blood banks and checks to see that everything's okay. And then, now when you worry about your pet feed, when your dogs and cats, this is where we come in too. The flea medications, when you give your pets, do you still give dysentery shots and all that? Medical feeds for medicated feeds for our livestock, that's under a lot of controversy. Ever heard about antibiotics and, oh yeah, we hear a lot about it. And then the other thing that really hit the fan a few years ago was, remember the feed that was contaminated with melamine for your dogs and cats, and the kidneys were really affected. I'll tell you a sort of a sad fact that there were more calls on the pets than there wasn't any other human kind of food. It's like, oh, well, we know what's really important to people. Okay, next. Radiological health, I've gone to that. Even your TVs, because it's a spectrum of the it's radioactive electronic products. There are certain definitions in the law that allow us to have jurisdiction or not have jurisdiction. Okay, next. So do we regulate everything? Really? Okay, let's see if you can guess now what we might not regulate. Okay, which of these is not a regulated product by the FDA? I mean, somebody regulates, but not necessarily us. Any guess?
How do they regulate spam?
Well, I'm not talking about spam, the kind of, you know, what you get in your email. I'm talking about the... it's called specially processed American meat. And we, huh? No, it is, next, it's Spam. It's the World War II, remember? I remember, I lived in Hawaii, we had a lot of that. And now it's a big deal, Spam is a big deal in Hawaii. They have Spam parades and festivals. But it's because it's regulated by the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture. Yes?
Have you gotten into electronic cigarettes?
We have just proposed the regulation for electronic cigarettes. Now, this does not mean it's going to be a final. Whatever we propose goes up for comment by the public. If you would care to, I would definitely comment. But you know, half the people, they don't even know that. They're not keeping up with the regulations. And then when they say, well, how come it's like this? How come the law and the regulations are like that? It's because somebody else besides you commented and they got their side. So please comment, okay? They're just issuing something. Please go to our website and check it out. And you can make a comment. It's pretty easy to make a comment. You know, they just say, here's your document, what they call it. Your document is called a quote-unquote docket. You have a number for each docket. Then you click on that, and it says, you want to make a comment? And then you go, you type in your comment, and you push send. Okay, it's pretty much like that. But if you don't comment, your voice is not heard.
How about condoms?
Oh, that's been regulated for a long time. But it's basically, the FDA is regulating the safety and effectiveness. We don't have a say on who, you know, who uses them. It's basically the law says you can regulate on these criteria, safety, effectiveness, you know, whether or not somebody uses them, you know, sort of not up to us, okay? Okay, which product is not FDA regulated? Okay, you can change it. Wait, you, next. Yep, you're right. Okay, next. Which isn't regulated by the FDA? Okay, I think I heard an answer. Next. We're going to kind of run through this so that I can go to the medication safety part. Okay, it's the oven cleaner. Next. Do we regulate pet turtles? Yep, we sure do. And that's because they had salmonella. There were some that had salmonella. There were incidences where little kids with the pet turtles were getting sick. So there's a regulation. You can only sell the turtles that are so big. It's changing, though, because their industry is changing itself. Okay. And then what about these products? Do we do the airport security x-ray machines? Yeah, because it's on that spectrum, electronic emitting radiation. Electronic emitting rays, we do that, okay? So what's your guess? Next, yep. Smoke detectors, next. What about the others? Which is not FDA regulated? Next. Baby pacifiers. Okay, next. And a lot of this was just developed and it evolved. The regulations evolved. There were memorandum of understanding between different entities, different agencies. That's how it all came about. Next one. Which one do we not regulate? Yep. And then next. What do we not regulate? GMOs, yes, we have something on that. But GMO covers a lot of different subjects, and we do that. I mean, that's a whole other talk in itself. Okay, next. It's the beer, because that's the alcohol, tobacco, TTB, tobacco.
I mean, why the canned tuna is not regulated? Because maybe it is old, maybe it is sick.
It's regulated by somebody else, not us.
Not regulated.
No, it is regulated. It's regulated by another agency, just not FDA. So when you have a question, you call TTB, you don't call us. And if you call us about a product that we do not regulate, we will just refer it to another agency, you can get an answer. Like if something happens to your lawnmower, we don't happen to regulate lawnmowers, but no, you got a problem with your lawnmower, right? So, or whatever it is. So we will call the CPSC and get you some action. But it's just that it's not us. And I just want to get you to know, because people call me, I take a lot of calls, and then they don't understand, and they say, oh, you know, we have a problem with this. It's not that I don't sympathize with them, but I do have to tell them about another agency. Sometimes I call them, I'm on the phone, and they can talk to another agency. But it's most efficient if you know what, you know, which agency to call, okay, or to email. Next. And then this called cosmetics. Do we do tattoos? Actually, we do, but, you know, tattoos are really fuzzy. There are many things in fuzzy that are fuzzy, and I'm just not going to dwell on it because I don't know if I should continue on this. And then soap. We do not do soap because it was some definition somewhere in the past. Okay, next. And animals. We do, which don't you think we do?
No.
Next. Parrots are, these birds have this disease. And so the Public Health Act gives FDA the authority to regulate interstate.
Popularly known as parrot fever.
Right. You shouldn't use that word. It's not generally known. It'd be better to use parrot fever next. So it's the grooming cream for dogs. And then next. And last one. Which one don't we do? Yep, you're right. Okay, I just want to give you a sense of what we do, and then I'm going to go to, it's much more technical, well, it's not a fun thing, but it's about medication safety. And I think that, you know, I'm on medication, many of you are on medication. I just came from Hawaii where my dad took some medication, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, something pretty bad happened. So I want to go over medication safety, supplements, and fraud. And we will try to, I'll try to go through the PowerPoint and at the end show you a story that I did myself, and it's about my family and about how we were affected by fraud. I'm not going to dwell on fraud that much, but if you see the digital story, you'll see how it affected people, and I don't have to say much. It speaks for itself. Okay, I'm going to move to the next one. I'll get out of this. Let's see. Escape. Okay, close this guy out. Now, this is a pretty comprehensive on medication safety. But I did ask Stephanie what you would like to do, either fraud or medication safety. And she said you wanted medication safety. So here goes. Okay. Now, this one I'm going to use my notes because this is a little bit more serious stuff. Okay, I'll tell you when to change it, okay? Stephanie, okay, next. Okay, this is the mission of FDA. You know, it gets to be less fun and games, but it really is to protect the public health by assuring the safety, efficacy, meaning effectiveness, and security of human and veterinary drugs. We are now worried about the security. If you know about the counterfeit drug problem, the kind of movement of drugs across the borders, and even intrastate, you would be concerned too. But it's getting to be a very, very complicated picture. The top one is, these are all historical pictures. We had a poison squad back when the FDA was first founded in 1906. And Harvey Wiley had people, young, I think they were medical students and some other volunteers, eat foods that had additives. And if they got sick, then we wouldn't allow people to sell the additives. So they were the guinea pigs. But that's changed since then. Technology has really changed. How foods are produced, and I know some of you agree with some of it and some of you don't, but it's what it is now. And this is the soothing syrup. There were problems with drugs, antibiotics. They were the wonder drugs. But then, you know, kids didn't like to take it. So in one instance, it was a very bad incident. They mixed this cough syrup, this antibiotic, with propylene glycol, which is antifreeze, and the child and other children died because of kidney failure. And that was a horrible incident. So then safety of drugs became very, very important. So in 1938, Congress passed the Federal FD&C Act that showed that, which required that drugs be shown safe. And then 1962 added the requirement that drugs must be effective. You can just send it, sell it. It had to work for something. And that's how the clinical trial process came about. 1976, we talked about medical devices. And I know I have sometimes trip over my tongue when I talk about medical devices because it's getting so complicated, so, so very complicated. Some of our inspectors, they just deal with the software, and they just look at some of the software, and, you know, their inspection always includes that. So you need some expertise now, and it's very, very hard to keep up with the technology. Okay, next. And so basically, this is what we're going to learn. We're going to learn about drug interactions, learning about your medicines, generics, how to report problems, and drug interaction, dietary supplements. Next. Okay, now, the vast majority of harm from approved drug occurs because of misuse, inappropriate use, abuse, medical mix-ups, and these are preventable. Next. Now, there's a lot of people who take a lot of drugs. Are you one of the 30 million people who take 5 or more prescription medications a day? The number of Americans on this polymedication regimen has increased from 22% to 37%, and this was 2 years ago. And I think some of you are in this category. I know I take a lot. I have lupus on top of other things. So it's like, you know, I used to say, I don't take any medication, whammo, now I do. We do, next. Okay, that's called health fraud, and we are pretty active in health fraud. Now, unfortunately, we cannot catch everything we would like to. We have import alerts or instructions to our import people that they can't bring it over the border. I think the problem is when people carry it in their suitcases and they tuck it under their clothes, and you can't get everybody, right? I mean, they're not inspecting everybody. And so sometimes people bring it in like that. You know, each system, each country has a different system of medicine, but I've left some handouts on the table. There's one drug called, not drug, supplement, and it was from, I do believe it was made in Mexico. And the Mexican health officials were very, very concerned about it because it had a muscle relaxant and a really, really powerful non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It had steroids in it. So people took it. They did feel better. Sure, they felt better. It had so much stuff in it, right? Then they couldn't get it. Or they stopped. And, you know, if you're on steroids, and I've been on steroids before, and you stop cold, you got a big problem. And being on steroids, I know I've been on prednisone. Because of my lupus, it can really affect like your blood sugar. I mean, it affects a lot of things. So, yeah, you mentioned a problem. Yeah, you're right. And we really try hard to work not only stopping it, but also one of the reasons I do this is so people know maybe they shouldn't pick it up from the swap meet, right? So, but it's very hard. If you see the, and I'm going to go through some of them. Okay, thank you. But that's part of the reason I almost only was going to cover all that stuff because that's so important. Okay, so 30 to 50% of the people don't take their medicines as prescribed. Look at the billions of dollars that are lost because of medication errors. 7,000 children under 11 years are treated in emergency rooms because of overdoses of cough and cold medicines because of the acetaminophen or some other what you feel are okay active ingredients, but too much is never good, especially for a little kid. So you have to watch that you don't double up on medicines. I mean, think of your grandkids now. My granddaughter lives in England, and my daughter calls me about this stuff, and, she's just crying too much. I can't stand it. Well, you know what? Maybe it's better to have a crying child. I know it's just really hard to listen to a kid like that, but, you know, you want to be safe. You always want to be safe. Thank you. Next. So read the labels, store medicines correctly, follow dosing schedules. Do you cut your pills? Do you save money? Sometimes you can. Sometimes you shouldn't. Okay, we're going to go through that. And again, we do really want to ask that you watch your medicines, because poison control centers get a lot of not so good reports. And then, you know, it's usually too late by the time you've called the poison control center. Next. And so we do have some educational materials. You know, there's a lot of news about people who, and teens, who are using their parents or their grandparents or their aunts or uncles' prescription medicines and getting high, right? Or sometimes they make new formulations. You know, people are pretty smart about that. So, caution is the word. Keep it locked up. Keep it high. Okay, next. So, you know, it seems really like obvious. Name of patient is like, yeah. I'm like, what is she saying that for? I was at the pharmacy in Santa Monica. I know some of you know Santa Monica. And it was a very reputable pharmacy. And the pharmacist called the name of the guy. Guy came up, gave him the package, whatever. He left. And she grabbed the next one, and all of a sudden she looked at it. She went, I gave the wrong medicine to that man. She didn't know how to call him back. He had left. And she looked around, and he ran out the door. It was an older gentleman, but he still was pretty fast. And she didn't know how to contact him because, right? I don't know exactly what happened, and I don't know what happened to that medicine, but I sure do hope he looked at that medicine bottle before he popped the pills. This is your drug facts. It's for your over-the-counter medicines. How many of you look at it and read it? Very good. And one of the most important things you can look at are the warnings, and you can look at the ingredients. So remember I said about the kids dying because there's too many. They give them something with a Tylenol or acetaminophen in it. They give them another preparation with acetaminophen in it, and all of a sudden you've got liver damage. It's like, whoop, what happened? Okay. So read your active ingredients and also your inactive ingredients, because sometimes people are saying, you know, I'm allergic to yellow dye. They didn't look at their ingredients, and then they're allergic to their medicine. Or people have called me because they say, is there sugar in this or salt? And I've got high blood pressure. Okay. For many over-the-counter medicines, they do have a word about, if you have high blood pressure, check with your health professional. Okay, medication guides for your prescription medicines, read that too, and it's usually there because it's FDA-approved medication guide. There is something about that medicine that you gotta watch out for. So that's why we have it. And it's to help patients avoid serious, serious problems. And believe you me, they can be serious. Your decision-making should be informed by these medication guides. Now, with my dad, I told you, I'll talk about my dad. He was really having a lot of pain on his, you know, with his knee. So I took him to the doctor. He could hardly walk. I had to have a special transport. Then the doctor gave him, you said, oh, you know, you're taking this, it was a nerve pill. And he said, you know, I'm going to give you a stronger dosage. This one doesn't seem to be working. I was a little bit concerned about it because I didn't even know what it was. I looked it up. Because I don't know about every medicine, I look it up too. And it said it could cause tics and jerks. And lo and behold, by the next day, my dad started, first his hand jerked like this. And he jerked a little bit. I said, this is really weird. Now, where did I read this, you know? We gave it to him again because he said he was, you know, we were trying to get him not in pain. And then I said, you know what, this is not good. Because he couldn't control anything. And so, you know, I'm really glad I read the medication guide because it said, hey, here's the side effects. So we stopped it and we called the doctor, of course. But I mean, you know, read your medication guide because if something happens to you, you want to at least be aware of it. Yes, Stephanie? A is adverse event. Okay? Adverse event. It means something bad happens, okay? And I'm sorry that in the government they use a lot of jargon. AERs are one of them. Okay. Thank you. And this is a black box warning about valproate. And it talks about pancreatitis, which could be fatal, you know. Hemorrhagic, it says, described as hemorrhagic with a rapid progression from initial symptoms to death. It's like, whoa. You know, so read your black box warnings. You know, there's sometimes warnings like this. It's just a heavy lines around it, but please read it, okay? And you have to be aware and monitor the symptoms of you or your family. Next. Now, if you don't follow directions, you could be in for trouble because medication may be ineffective or it could cause a serious adverse event or AE. Here's one story. A woman said, you know, I've got to go to work. I have this heart medication. I'm supposed to take it 3 times a day. And what's happening? She said, you know, I can't bother. Like maybe she was teaching school or something. I can't remember to do this in the middle of the day. So she took her medicine all at once, all 3 pills, all in the morning. Well, she didn't have too happy an ending. I mean, I think she was eventually okay, but she probably shouldn't have done it. And then, so there's a fentanyl patch. You know, your pain meds really got to watch out for. In one case, the fentanyl patch, somebody ate it. I mean, I couldn't believe they did it. They ate it and they died. You know, it's been, we have had, you know, like your Tiger Balm, it's imported. You know, and it's for, it's an analgesic to help relieve pain. And it is really pretty effective. It's from Asia. Yeah, but somebody again, you know. So read the directions, people, or ask somebody if you don't know. Just don't.
You want to go to Tiger Balm Gardens.
Right, but don't drink it, okay? Okay. You know about Tiger Balm Gardens, huh? I know somebody. Yeah, you've been there. How many people have been to Tiger Balm Gardens? Very good. Okay, so you read the package insert. Now, this is the drug and condition interactions. Watch for your kidney disease and laxative. Laxatives are a little, you know, be careful when you take laxative, especially if you're going to have your colonoscopy. They now, FDA does have a warning about laxatives, especially if you take a, you know, if you go for your colonoscopy, you're going to lug a bunch of that down. Sodium phosphate laxatives, yeah, be careful. High blood pressure, sorry, another acronym, and decongestants. You take decongestants when you get a cold or allergy. Careful on that one. I've talked about the drug where you double up on drugs. Viagra and nitrates. We've had big problems with Viagra. Cipro and antacids. Huh? Unintended? Well, yeah. But we have, that is a lot of the health fraud. They put it in there and they don't label it. Cipro and antacids. How many of you have taken Cipro? It's usually used for urinary tract infections, for other infections. Yeah. You know, you can't eat chocolate. You're not supposed to drink dairy. I mean, there is a whole list of stuff you're not supposed to do with that. And I didn't know that, you know? Sedatives and antihistamine, again, you get really sleepy. Don't drive. COX-2 inhibitors like Celebrex and aspirin. Okay, you just, these don't do well together. Then drug foods. I have a whole thing on foods and drug interactions, but it's too many things you would, you know, you've heard about grapefruit, right? Grapefruit and statins. You guys heard about that, right? Don't eat grapefruit if you're taking statins.
I eat grapefruit every morning.
Huh? Statins, like cholesterol. But, you know, they're doing more research, and it might be slightly overblown, but depends how much you eat. And maybe a little bit is okay, but, you know, they're saying like 4 glasses. If you drink a couple of glasses, 3 to 4 glasses, you have to really start watching out. Yeah, some people do. Yeah. Some people really like it. I mean, there's a grapefruit diet, right? Grapefruit juice diet. And people will take a lot of it. They want to lose weight. You're sitting here, right? But, you know, it could be that, you know, what's affected, which might be silent to you, is that your liver enzymes, it's making your statin more powerful. You're getting too much of it because your lid, it affects the metabolism of your medication. So it could be that it's affecting your liver and you don't quite know it yet. So be careful, okay? I think that you're... Well, you know, some people, I would check with my healthcare professional on that one. And there are certain cultures that have, like, they eat, when I talked about the leafy greens, you know, I am Asian, right? And there's when you go to Chinatown to eat, you see some of the really dark Chinese vegetables. Do you? Well, maybe you don't. But if you do, some of the Asian physicians and researchers are trying to figure that out about when their diet is very high in foods that contain a lot of vitamin K, how we adjust the dosage of the particular anticoagulant. But then you have to ask, you know, you can't just guess, okay? Vitamin E, St. John's wort, your supplements really have a lot of interactions and people don't always realize it. So you might have to check with your, on the web, Medline Plus, and I left the bookmarks, I left it pretty late, has pretty good information on all kinds of subjects. You might want to take a look at that. Okay, next. Again, we have educational campaigns about all these problems that I talked about. And you can find that on our website, www.fda.gov, and click on drugs. Thank you. So, again, be aware of your medicines. Know if you can cut pills. And you should talk to the pharmacist about that, because if it's a time release, can you cut a time release pill? Oh, okay, you know that. I knew that you knew it. And, you know, sometimes it's very tempting to, if you can't find your glasses and it's time to take your medicine, to do that. Huh?
Time release.
Because then what happens is you might get, like, extended release. Yeah. Like, you know, like a blood pressure medicine, it could lower your blood pressure too much. Okay, next. And can you put your medicine in the bathroom? How many people do that? Humidity can break it down. Can you always put your medicine in a pill box? Huh? Those little things with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I know a lot of people do, but sometimes they say no because it's either the light, something that could break your medicine down. Always check before you just do that. Sometimes you do need the regular bottle. What about the cotton lining on the top? Do you leave it in? You know why you have the cotton lining on the top? Well, that's because when they ship it, you know, drugs are, you know, here goes back to this gentleman's question. Drugs are shipped way across the country and way across countries. Many active pharmaceutical ingredients are not made here. They're made in Asia. They're made in Europe. They're made in other places, okay? So even though the pill says made in the U.S., you think the pill is made in the USA, some of the active ingredients may have come from another place. They do check, our inspectors do check drug companies, and they do check it for, you know, they do check many, many parts of that drug manufacturing process. So if the pill is made here, you can be pretty sure it's safe. When it's made somewhere else, like if you go on the internet and you buy something from Germany, you say, well, Germany's a pretty advanced country, yeah? Canada. Well, beware, I'm going to go through that more, but, you know, the cotton is to keep the pills from breaking up in the bottle so that when you open the bottle, it's not all cracked up. But it does absorb moisture, but it could absorb too much moisture. You have it in the bathroom, you have the cotton in the bottle, and all of a sudden, you've got too much moisture for that particular bunch of pills. So the product may break down. Okay? So take it out. Okay, and here this just tells you about the same thing I talked about. Should you keep medicines around? You got your Vicodin. You had a surgery 2 years ago. You still got the Vicodin in your cupboard. I don't even want to see a show of hands for that one. I know you guys probably have it. Okay, and then if somebody, your grandkid, gets into it, don't look at me. Okay, yeah. They usually say that it's about, it depends on the pill. Some you can have maybe a few months after, you know, so if it's July 14th, if you took it, let's say, a few months after, it might still be okay. Some chemicals break down sooner. It depends on the pill. So I would always talk to your pharmacist saying, you know what, this is expired. And, you know, kind of the stock answer is, oh, throw it away. But, you know, it's not so simple. But I would, people have been embarrassed. There was a physician, a story about a physician. He had some bad congestion or something. And he took expired medicines and he said, how come? He didn't realize it was expired and then it didn't work for him. So, you know, so it's just that as time goes on, the medicine gets less and less predictable. And so I would, again, proceed with caution. I'm not saying if it's expired on December 1st and on December 2nd, it's not going to be good. But as time goes on, the effectiveness and the problems start multiplying. This is like food. I mean, okay, your milk, expired yesterday, you might still drink it today, but I don't know if you should keep it for the next 3 weeks. But you check with your health professional and your pharmacist. Okay? Thank you. Avoid antibiotics. We still, and especially in certain communities, they love their antibiotics. My parents love their antibiotics, and they hoarded them. Believe you me, they just kept it. And if their kids got sick, they had something ready supply. And it still happens today. And what happens? You know, my sister, she does this. And she doesn't give it to her kids, but she might stop it before it's time or something like that. And you do run into a problem because, you know, you can develop the microbes, bacteria that the antibiotics are supposed to kill off, if you stop it too soon, you might have some of the stronger ones surviving, and they get stronger, and then the next time you take that antibiotic, it won't work. And believe me, if you have a really bad infection and your antibiotic is not working, you've got a problem. So follow directions, okay? And doctors have a little give on this. So that you can ask, you know, if I really do feel better, do I still need to take it? And they might say yes, and there's usually good reason. It's a public health problem as well as a personal problem. So be very careful with your antibiotics. And then, I don't know if anybody remembered, April 26th, Take Back Day, disposal of medicines. Okay, do you flush your medicines down the toilet? Oh, no, you don't do that, right? Who would do that? They ruin the environment. Well, you can do that for certain medications. We do recommend it. If that medication is so powerful and so dangerous that if your pet dog got into your garbage or a homeless person got into your garbage and happened to take those pills and they would keel over, then you know what? We do ask that they be flushed down the toilet. That's our recommendation. It's not for every drug, of course. And there is a lot of, when you go to the bathroom, and this sounds really terrible, I'm glad it's not right after dinner, but when you go to the bathroom, and if you've taken a lot of medications, don't you think that it's eliminated just through your natural elimination? So it's not that, you know, the water systems do not have any medications in them. So we do have rationales for why we recommend what we do. If you are going to dispose of it, and it's not recommended that you flush it down the toilet, mix it with coffee grounds or something like this so that it will be very not that visible and unpalatable to whoever comes by trying to do the recycle thing. I think so. It's called Take Back Day. They usually have advertisements for it, or your pharmacy will tell you. And it's not, I think they had one in Long Beach, at several places. I don't know where it was in Santa Monica. Do you remember? You didn't know it existed? Oh, well, it does exist, but We have to live in Santa Monica. Yeah. Usually, if you even take it back to the pharmacy, they will tell you where to take it, you know. So, yeah, it happens every year or twice a year. I think it was it once a year. But they always have pharmacy take-back days. Okay. So, now I talked about the drugs from Canada. You know, we have a facility near Los Angeles Airport. It's an international mail facility, and you should see the boxes of stuff that come in. Many of them being drugs and dietary supplements from China, from Germany, from who knows where, from Mexico, from Africa. People order stuff from all over, but they feel very safe when it's from Canada. But, you know, they're hoping to save some money, and I don't blame you. Drugs are expensive. But when we, out of 1,700 drug parcels that we examined, when we saw these things come in, these drug products come in, 85% of them actually came from other countries. They didn't come from Canada. So, you know, they just label something, but do you trust it? I don't think you should trust it. They didn't come from Canada. They were from Romania and Bangladesh. I mean, who knows where they were from. So just be careful. And that's why we recommend going to the same pharmacy, because they do have your medications on record and they can tell you if you're going to take something that interacts with something else. Okay, there's some good websites, napb.net and VIPPS. If you're going to buy online, use those sites. Okay? It's called National Association of Boards of Pharmacies and the Verified Internet Pharmacy Practice Site. Okay, next. What do you think this is? When you buy, and this could even happen to, it's happened in this country, Avastin, Lipitor have been found to be counterfeit. We found some counterfeit products, and that is scary. You know, the drugs are shipped. They put them in trucks or whatever, and there's been an incident where, you know, the trucks have to account for where their routes. But it is very, very, very difficult to detect counterfeit product. We do have special equipment that tests, like molecularly, or they look at the chemicals. But you as a consumer, me as a consumer, we can't really figure that out. It's hard.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes. You're right in that. It's an enormous amount of product. If you saw what comes in, the stacks of stuff. We do work with the Customs and Border Protection. We do examine everything electronically in terms of we check the history and the other kinds of the history of the particular shipper. There are different ways we check. We don't have enough people. We don't have enough resources. I'm going to be. I'm just telling you that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's fine. Yep. Handout on statins. And we have additional information on statins that is on there. It's called Expanding Statin, the Information on Statin Risk. You all should be aware that once the FDA approves the drug, it's not the end-all, be-all of everything. We do often ask for posts once it gets through the big population, even though a drug is approved, we find different things happening, and there are add-ons, and we call that is published on the FDA website. Also usually on your Medline website. So please do, you know, remember that information about medications always evolves. And so don't think just because when people say FDA approved, they say, oh, this is not perfectly safe. There's no such thing as zero risk. And that I want you to know right from the get-go. Okay, let's see, as you age, okay. Now, we know, research has shown, that the geriatric population reacts differently to some products than those who are, you know, 30 years younger. It's just your metabolism changes, the way you process the chemicals, whatever you're doing when you're taking all these other different medications, your body changes. And so drugs have a different effect sometimes, and that should be on the label. You know, your liver function, your kidney function may not be as robust as it was. And you have less body weight, sometimes more body weight. All that makes a difference. Okay, next. So ask questions. I know generics, that's a big deal. I just spoke to someone about it. I know that it can be a problem sometimes for some people. I'm not saying that everything that we approve is perfect. Should I take it within? You know, ask these questions. And I think you all do, right? How long should I take it? You don't want to take there's some drugs. Remember the fen-phen thing? Where people wanted to lose weight? They're only supposed to take it for 6 weeks. And then what happens is they're taking it for 2 years, 3 years. You know, man, it worked. But they got pulmonary hypertension, which is a serious condition. So, you know, you have to watch, and if it says quit after so much time, quit. So if you're allergic to medications, and some of you are, or to the ingredients in your medication, let your doctor know, let your pharmacist know. I know it's a bother. You know, it's sometimes more expensive. It's more of a bother to try to obtain medications that fit your needs, but you got to do it. Traditional healing methods. Sometimes, and I think a lot of the population uses traditional healing methods. You might not say so, but you know, you've considered going to the acupuncturist. You've considered doing acupressure. You've gone to Botanica. You know, you've gotten stuff you go to different ethnic communities, stuff over the counter. You'll try it. You look at Dr. Oz. He doesn't only talk about medicines, right? He talks about all kinds of stuff. Well, there's something that I remember. It started with a G. It was supposed to help you lose weight. What was that one? I know you. If you watch Dr. Oz, you'll know what. You'll be able to tell me. So, you know, we all see a lot of information about things that would help our health, but we have to use a little discernment. Okay. Next. We do have a record keeping, it's on our website. And Stephanie, if you want, how many people do you have that in this club? Oh, I'm not going to mail you 200. Okay, but it's nice in hard copy form sometimes. If you want it, do you guys want it in hard copy form or you would just take it off the website? Okay, that's fine. Okay. Now we'll do the drug discovery process. I don't know if I need to dwell that much on it. Next. It's really long, complicated, and sometimes not so... It's hard. I am actually in a clinical trial now for lupus, and it's been kind of an interesting experience. Next. Basically, the FDA evaluates the risk and benefits of a drug. We start on the animals, start on the test tube, and we look at the risks and benefits. But it's not only the FDA that evaluates it. It's your provider for you. What if that particular drug product, would it be good for you? What are the risks for you? What are the benefits for you? And the patient, you have a say too. You don't always have to take something. You know, you have to look at your label, look at the information you have available and decide whether this is the right drug for you. So here is the animal studies. And basically, the clinical trial period are focused on issues, you know, does it cause cancer? Does it cause birth defect? What about the toxicity? Does it change the genes? You know, there's a lot of different questions that go into having a drug go through the clinical trial process. And for new molecular entities or new drugs, they always do go through this process. I started out with, I think, a phase 2 or 3 on a lupus drug. I didn't know what I was taking. I have an infusion. And, you sat there for how many hours and you got this infusion. But, you know, frankly, nothing else was working, so I figured, hey. And I went to a pretty renowned doctor, so I thought, hey, what's the risk? You know, sometimes for some people, like even for cancer, they say, you know, they feel that they don't have that many options. And so I get questions about, is there a clinical trial available? And there is a website, www.clinicaltrials.gov. And you can look for that. And that is sometimes helpful because, you know, it's like, for me, I thought, should I try it? Is it risky? I mean, I knew there was going to be a risk. I mean, I didn't know what they're putting in my body. So I tried it, and after about 2 months, I had this horrible flare-up where I couldn't even touch the microwave, you know, it just because I have, my lupus is causes something with the veins and then it affects my skin, affects my brain, it's like, oh my gosh, you know. So I tried it, and after 3 months, you know, things started leveling out, and I still didn't know whether I was on the drug or not, but, you know, it's like, hey, my doctor said, you know, things are looking kind of better. And I said, yeah, they are. So I continued, and then they went through, passed the phase 3. I'm actually in a phase 5 or 6 now, and they're testing different dosing schedules. And like I used to get it twice a month, and then skip a month, twice a month, and skip a month. Now I have to get it 4 times a month, and they give me a standard dose. You know, who knows? Well, let me tell you, when I didn't take it, I skipped the dose because I went to England to see my daughter. She lives in England. Well, let me tell you, I paid for it. It was kind of a miserable trip. So I thought, won't do that again. So clinical trials can be bad or good. There have been some very bad stories about clinical trials, too. You do take a risk, but they try to make it safe in that a lot of the toxicity and the safety part of it is already figured out before they have humans participate. And the FDA looks at their protocol and sees, you know, it has to be pretty safe for humans. There is a bit of a risk. You don't really know how effective it is. But a lot of the safety profile is already done. So you have the phase 1 trials where they have healthy people, usually just a few people. Phase 2 is starting to look more at the safety and effectiveness. When they have it for a few people, it's like, how is it absorbed? How is it excreted? All that. Phase 3 is they're starting to look at, you know, more marketing issues like what's the dosage? What's the schedule? All that kind of stuff. The drug sponsor has to give pretty good evidence before approval. Okay, so next. So, you know, I'm in that clinical trial. I did have to qualify. Not so easy to qualify. People say, oh, I don't want to be in a clinical trial. Because, you know, it's too risky. But when you do want to be on a trial, sometimes you can't get in. In fact, a lot of times you can't get in, you know, because of another drug you've taken before, your age, your, you know, whatever, the condition you are in, how advanced your disease is. But, you know, this is something to look into. If you have a serious disease and you think, you know, and your doctor might, it's usually your doctor would say, I think there's a clinical trial you might fit in. Why don't you try for it? That's how it usually happens. And I think your larger teaching hospitals, UCLA, Cedars-Sinai, USC, they all have clinical trials. But it's not that easy to get in. I'm just telling you about my personal experience. Okay, next. And so this is your website. And you say, I'm not interested. But, you know, hopefully you won't have to be interested in this. It's not that fun to have something where you think I'm going to have to look for a clinical trial. Okay, next. Generics. Okay, we've had a little bit of discussion already in the break about generics. And it's 70% of prescriptions. Yeah, that's a lot. It's a $1 billion industry. And, you know, with now this new healthcare mandate, there might be more use of it. They tend to want, your healthcare plans may tend to want to move towards this because of why? Expense, right? And there's reasons why generics are less expensive. Sometimes even generics are pretty expensive, you know. In our healthcare system, unless you have great insurance, there's nothing much that is that cheap. So, next. Okay, it's usually, basically the generics are supposed to be same in that they have the same active ingredient, same route of administration, meaning that you stick it under your tongue for the brand name, you stick it under your tongue for the generic. They have the same dosage form, like pills, capsules, liquids. They should have the same strength and conditions of use. You take it 3 times a day for generic, you take it 3 times a day for your brand and generic. Inactive ingredients, they usually have an approved list of excipients and whatnot that go into a pill. Next. But the difference is that whereas your brand name drug, your drug that's on patent has done the animal studies, the clinical trials, they've done tests in bioavailability. Your generic drug looks at bioequivalence. They don't have to go through all that testing stuff, okay? So it's less expensive for the drug companies, and they have a abbreviated drug application. They don't have to go through all of that, so it's less expensive to produce. There have been very few incidents where generics have been withdrawn from the market. Mostly they seem to work okay. There are some people who don't like it, and then the doctor usually puts them on the brand name. I think there's only one that there was a little bit of a brouhaha about. It was an estrogen drug. It was an estrogen drug. It's off the market, so like who knows what it was. So, again, we have, the FDA has materials on that that you're certainly welcome to look at. Download, and basically this is what bioequivalent means. It means that the brand name drug is delivered to your body in the same amount of time and with the same amount of active ingredient. So this is bioequivalent. So your generic drug has to be bioequivalent. If it, you show a graph like this when they do your blood testing, it's not. It wouldn't be an approved generic drug. But then again, there's other things that go into drug making, like the color of your pill, what they add to it, you know, all that. Okay, next. Now, this is an OTC, this is a brand name prescription drug, or just a prescription drug, not brand name, but prescription drug that now is over the counter. Example, Claritin. Now, they have to show that people can sort of self-diagnose, and they can take it correctly, and it's not toxic. It's a case-by-case basis, but the basic premise is that if they put a drug that was prescribed, and you had to get it from the pharmacist and go to the doctor, now you can get it just by buying it off the counter, it has to be safe for you, okay? And you have to recognize the conditions for which you will take it for. Now, if you have a problem with your drug, and like, if you take a statin and you got muscle pain, if you take something and you're throwing up all the time, it makes you nauseated, you've got a big rash, you might want to report it on MedWatch. But sometimes drugs, if you read the fine print and you look at the drug labeling that comes with your medications, it might list all that already. A lot of times, your drug manufacturers, your drug sponsors know that you're going to have these problems, but it does not hurt to report it. Again, it's a smaller drug, it's a smaller population where the drugs are tested. Like I think, I don't know how many are in my trial, but when it gets to the bigger marketplace, then a lot of things can happen. And so that's why we have people, drug companies, for some instances have we ask for post-surveillance studies, meaning that they have to keep track of what happens. The other part where they have is medical devices like breast implants. They ask people, because there were so many problems in the beginning, to have studies of people who did get the breast implants to have some data and input. Now, you know, I think the medical device companies tried to do this, But by the time, you know, the ladies sort of didn't want to bother, so they didn't cooperate. So it's very hard, you know, because they have to get the people, and the people have to fill out the questionnaires, and who wants to do that sometimes? So, but they are supposed to do, for many instances, post-market surveys. And so this, but the MedWatch is really good in that it helps agency track what happens, what bad experiences are happening. Okay, next. You can use the form, and you can report for foods, drugs, devices, supplements, you know. Now, if you found, I got a call once because somebody called me about a sandwich, and they said they found a cockroach in it. Now, in a sense, it was kind of a bad experience. I mean, at least they saw the cockroach before they bit into it. However, that is more like your county. Remember I said there's some things that we don't do. We are concerned about the cockroach in your sandwich. However, it's a retail outlet, so mainly your county health department would take care of that. Okay? But I have gotten calls, and I'm not going to say anything terrible to the person. I'll just say, you know, that is a county matter. And sometimes we even offer to call the county for them. Okay. Serious, you use MedWatch for serious or life-threatening conditions. If you took a pill and it caused that you needed some medical intervention or you needed hospitalization. My dad being one of them, he took that nerve pill and all of a sudden he couldn't swallow. Okay? That needed medical intervention. Then, should that be reported on MedWatch? Yes. Okay. Did I do it? I better do it. Okay. You know, if you feel, and this is really sad, if you feel that the particular drug, if a woman feels it harmed her unborn child, the child was born with some congenital defect, she would report it. She is, you know, it's so upsetting that it's hard, you know, for her. It may take her for a while to report. But the thing is, it's better to report sooner than later because then you remember what happened. And it's also helpful if you get your doctor to help you write that report. We accept all reports. You don't have to prove cause. But it is helpful to have somebody who's pretty good medically or chemically to help you with the report. But we will accept for every consumer. Okay, next. If you got the bottle and all your pills were cracked, then report it. If you got your glucose test meter, you know, for your diabetes, and you never got a reading on it, it was blank the whole time, report it. Okay? Because sometimes we have recalled glucose test strips when they're not so good, so to speak. We do have recalls. That's one of our enforcement strategies. Recalls. We can recall foods, drugs, anything. It used to not be mandatory. For some things, now it is mandatory. But mostly, the MedWatch, one thing bad about the MedWatch is that it's voluntary. There's some categories like dietary supplements, if you have a bad reaction, the supplement manufacturers have to report it. Foods, not so much. I think there's stricter rules for your drugs and medical devices. Okay, so again, packaging problems, device manufacturers, device failure, user error. We have a new Food Safety Modernization Act, and that has really changed the landscape on recalls. The agency does have more power now, and that's really helpful. You know, you can't just, you know, the companies are not that motivated to recall all their products is very expensive. But with the Food Safety Modernization Act, we do have recall authority now, which is great. Okay. Here's how to report. You can online, tear out, download, fax. Okay. Next. What? It was physician. Desk reference, desk reference. It's a book that has all the drugs in it, yeah. It's a book that has all the drugs in it. Physician's desk reference, yeah. And sorry about the acronym. It's what?
Say that again.
Big and heavy and a great refreshing butterfly.
That's right. So I think you can get a lot of that online now. At least you don't have to carry it. Okay, so name confusion of drugs. That's a big one. Okay, and you can report that, and we can ask a company to look at their names and maybe suggest change. Labeling, packaging, yes? Yeah, I think it's more reportable to the medical quality board. You know, we do not get into the practice of medicine. That has been kind of an agency jurisdictional line that we don't normally cross. It should be, I think you should talk to the Board of Medical Quality on that one. We can request packaging and labeling changes, name changes, modifying instructions for devices. You can do all that. Okay, if it's a vaccine problem, it's another system called VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Okay, next. And so if you're planning surgery, I think most of you know that you really got to tell your surgeon about all the dietary supplements and medications you're taking. Okay, everybody know that? Okay, you have to take your supplements and medications. If you're going for surgery, like often they'll tell you to stop your aspirin use and other things, yeah. But you have to tell them what you're taking, your surgeon, if it's different from your doctor. Okay? Because there could be bleeding risk. Next. Dietary supplements. How many of you take dietary supplements? Everybody does. What's the most popular dietary supplement?
Cialis.
Well, maybe, but glucosamine chondroitin sulfate is pretty popular. Glucosamine, you know, for the arthritis? That's popular, very popular. So he said that his doctors have told him that for the dietary supplements he's been taking, he just eliminates them through his urine, that he doesn't need to take it. Now, there's more and more research saying that their multivitamins and all that are not that needed. There's research coming out every day, and you have to look at the literature and take a look. I used to take a multivitamin every single day. And then I took a blood test when I went to for some problem. And he wanted to take a whole bunch of blood tests. And I said, really? Found out that I was very high in some of the components of the multivitamin. So he said, I think you should stop it because you're too high in like your B vitamins. And you're just too high. So I take maybe once in a while, but I certainly don't take it every day. You know? Basically, once in a while I'll take one, but not that often. I sometimes take vitamin C. I do. I take vitamin D. Thank you for reminding me. I do take vitamin D. And it's based on the blood test. If I'm like a little bit below normal, I will take it. No. I had a UTI, urinary tract infection, so I started taking cranberry juice. And there's been a little bit of research on that. I sometimes take a cranberry pill, but if it gets bad, I'll take cranberry juice straight. I'll take vitamin D. I take vitamin C. I do take calcium. Even though it's better, it's better for me if I just eat tons of yogurt. Yes? Okay, I'm going to show you then. I'm going to show you the digital story. And I think that's going to say everything I need to say about health fraud. Okay? I'm going to get out of this. And well, just to know that the bottom line in all this, if I skip through, just keep on skipping through, and I'll tell you where to stop. Skip, 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 skip. Skip, skip. Your claims, okay, your vitamin supplement, yeah, your vitamins and dietary supplements are not approved by the FDA. Okay, know that. I think you do know. Next. And then these are all the things they can interact with. Next. I don't know if it is. I can email someone here and tell you if it is. Here's your supplement effects. DMAA, sibutramine has stroke, chest pain, ginseng, sibutramine, yohimbe has that. So be safe, and I'm going to show you. I'd like a 2-minute thing to show you the digital story. 1 second. And that says everything I need to say. It's about my parents and me.